problem that arises when you try to integrate numerical relativity waveforms. And so the problem is that gravitational wave detector measures the strain H, but numerical relativity simulations usually don't compute that directly, but rather they compute the complex Y scale-up psi 4, which is related to the gravitational wave strain via two time integrals. And if you try to do this numerically, I mean, if you integrate that, it's fairly simple. You can use Simpson's rule or other, or midpoint rule or whatever. When you do this, you get spurious nonlinear drifts in your waveform. So your waveform is not oscillating about zero. That's, for example, shown here for the L4-M4 mode for different time integration schemes. So Adams-Moulton or fourth order Simpson's rule or midpoint rule. And as you can see, the wave mode is not, first of all, it's not centered about zero. And second, it's drifting away with a nonlinear, there's a nonlinear drift in it. I mean, so it's not just a linear drift or a constant arising from the integration constants, but it's really something higher order. And that's independent of the integration method that you use, because basically all these three methods, for example, reproduce the very same behavior. And then it's also not a gauge of finite radius effect, because this wave mode has been extracted at scry plus in Bondi gauge. So that could not be the problem. Cannot induce the drift then. So we have identified two problems that arise here, namely in the time domain. If you do time domain integration, the numerical noise appears as pseudo-random noise, and that it uses a random walk. And when integrated twice, you get huge deviations, almost four orders of magnitudes larger than the amplitude of the noise itself. And in the Fourier domain, you can also do the integration in the Fourier domain, but there the finite length of the signal gives rise to spectral leakage, which in turn amplifies low frequencies that are not physical and that give rise to, that result in this drift if you transform back to the time domain. So to get rid of that, we propose this integration scheme here, which is in the Fourier domain. So in the Fourier domain, integrating in the Fourier domain corresponds to dividing by the frequency. So to filter out these low frequency components, to some extent, we pick a certain frequency omega zero, which is smaller than the physical frequency that you expect in the signal, and you divide by this omega zero for all omegas that are smaller than this omega zero, and for all omegas greater than omega zero, you just continue as usual. And this method can greatly suppress the drifts, and it works straightforwardly for higher modes, because once you pick an omega zero, you immediately get this for higher modes due to this relation over there. And it's fairly robust because it doesn't depend crucially on the particular choice of omega zero. So an example is shown here, or two examples actually, for a number of different wave modes from binary black hole mergers. So the left panels are all an equal mass non-spinning binary, and the right panel is a spinning equal mass binary. And the effect is more pronounced for the higher modes. For example, here you have the L6-M6 mode in the lower panel. And the blue curve is the result of time domain integration, whereas the red curve uses this new integration scheme. And essentially, you get rid of all residual drifts. And if you test this method with analytic examples, you see that it's smaller than, that the error, remaining error is smaller than 1%. All right. So further details on the poster and especially the paper. Thanks.
All right, next up is Dorian Müller from Jena.
Yeah, so my poster presents our work towards higher mass ratio simulations of binary black holes in the moving puncture gauge, which in particular means that we have to modify this gamma driver condition. You've seen this in Mark Hannum's talk before. And so what we're working on is this damping term, and we've come up with some more or less clever ideas before, but in the end it turns out that we need to use only a formula for the stamping on the grid, which is as simple as this one, as long as it knows about the masses of the black holes and their positions in this manner. And yeah, in the end, using this for a test binary, you see the results here. It's a test binary of mass ratio 4:1, which we can simulate with standard methods nowadays too, and where we can compare. It turns out that the amplitude error, which is in the upper plot, and the phase error in the lower plot are significantly reduced, which is, you see this in the blue curves. So the blue curves are the amplitude errors for using this damping term, and here also the blue for this location-dependent damping, and the red curves are the errors for the same resolutions but with the constant damping, which is used up to now. So if you want to learn more, come and see my poster.
All right, we will now hear from Philip Mesta from the AAI.
Right, hello, I'm Philip Mesta. I'm a grad student at the AAI, and today I'm going to talk about my work on vacuum electromagnetic counterparts of binary black hole mergers. That's work done together with my collaborators, Carlos Palenzuela, Luciano Rezzola, Luis Lena, Shin Yoshida, and Dennis Polny, published in PID in February 2010. And so basically, Carlos already set the stage quite nicely this morning. The differences here are that we're not applying the force-free approximation. We have just the electromagnetic fields on the space-time, so we off the Einstein-Maxwell equations and see the effects of the space-time dynamics on the EM fields. But in this work, we concentrated also on spinning binaries, so we have spin-aligned binaries, aligned or anti-aligned, and I'm just going to quickly show you a movie that we've done of one of our simulations. And so basically what you're seeing here is on the left and blue and green, the phi 2, which is basically the outgoing electromagnetic radiation. On the right, you see the psi 4. So in that case, it's both the imaginary part of both these quantities. And so basically you can see the inspiral, the two black holes, the horizons in gray. The black holes are inspiraling. That's in d equals 8m non-spinning binary here. And now you see, as we get close to merger, we stop the simulation for a short while and basically zoom out so that you can appreciate the features in a bigger scale. And now you see the emission in both gravitational and EM bands. So overall, we found that the EM is a nice tracer of the space-time dynamics. It basically mimics very closely the behavior already in gravitational waves. And if you want to know more, please come see my poster or ask me any questions. Thank you.
Right, so next up is Bruno Munden, I think. Is that the right pronunciation of your last name? Please go ahead.
Okay, my name is Bruno Munden, and I'm going to talk about hybrid black hole binary initial data. Well, I think it's fair to say that most of the numerical relativity groups today use the usual approach of the Brent-Grubman puncture initial data with the Bowen-Yorke extrinsic curvature. And despite this method being very successful, it still has some shortcomings. For example, it makes use of a conformally flat metric, what makes impossible to encode, for example, the gravitational radiation for the past history of the binary. So our approach to the initial data is builds on the success of the Bowen-Yorke and Brent-Grubman approach, of the puncture approach, and that's the post-Newtonian approximation to the metric. So we start with the post-Newtonian metric that is basically the metric can be split in a part that is conformally flat, that it would be identical to the Bowen-Yorke and puncture data, and a radioactive part, HIJTT. And the same way that the post-Newtonian expansion of the conjugate momentum can also have a 1.5 piece of the extrinsic curvature, and 2.5 Bs. So the advantage of this metric is that you can have simple expression for the metric, for the spatial metric and the conjugate momentum. You don't have the logarithmic divergence as you would have in harmonic coordinates. And a single black hole data also reduces to the Schwarzschild in isotropic coordinates. What is good, because you can introduce in an ad hoc way the black holes in the post-Newtonian theory. Up to 1.5 pn, as I showed here, this part here is has a conformal, is a Born-Yorke extrinsic curvature. So you're basically adding a higher order term for the post-Newtonian data. And the extrinsic curvature trace up to 3 pn vanishes, what is a good feature because it decouples the Hamiltonian constraint from the momentum constraint. What about HTT? So HTT is the part that is hard to calculate, and actually it took around 20 years to have the whole picture ready. Last year, Vinny just presented the whole picture. I'm not going to repeat. I'm just going to say that initially we have one part that was an approximation for the near zone, and then you have the remainder that has to be calculated, taking into account the past history of the binary. So, and you have like three pieces, that present, retarded, and interval piece that are very complicated to calculate. Nonetheless, was already calculated. Unfortunately, the evolution of this data presented a short eccentricity for the data and apparent horizon mass decay along the inspiral. So that was a feature that we do not desire. So we've been working to reduce this undesirable problem. Our approach is basically to combine the Born-Yorke puncture initial data. So we basically solve the Hamiltonian constraint for the conformal factor that we call here the Born-Yorke conformal factor. And then we rescale the metric and the extrinsic curvature or the conjugate momentum by that conformal factor instead of the post-Newtonian conformal factor. And I add the higher order terms for the post-Newtonian corrections. With this data, we were able, first, to reduce the constraint violation. As you can see here on this curve, you have the constraint violation for the PN data. In the blue curve, you have the constraint violation for this hybrid data that I'm just showing. And in red curve, you have the Born-Yorke data. So we do have an improvement on that data. Also, this just says where the apparent horizon is sitting, and the puncture is sitting over here. Okay, we do have an improvement on the Hamiltonian constraint violation, an improvement on the decay of the mass. Now we don't have that decay in the mass, despite we still have some bumps going on there. But most importantly, that I would like to call your attention is that we do have a reduction of the spurious radiation for the initial for the waveforms. So in blue you have the new data that we have, and in red you have the Born-Yorke data. And you can see that in the phase domain, in the phase plot along time. We have a decrease in the spurious radiation. And I'll leave here with the image from the hybrid data. The hybrid data with the waves in there. If you want to talk about more details and see some cool movies, just stop by my poster. Thank you.
All right, we will reconvene.